Before I answer who are the Syrian rebels who are becoming popular on the internet for capturing Syria and force the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad to seek asylum in Russia, you need to understand this whole game of proxies that have been operating in Syria and causing the Syrian civil war since 2011 for almost more than a decade now. So pay attention, I'm going to explain it in the simplest way. At first, we have the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad, who became the president in the year 2000. Under him, there is the Syrian armed forces. Naturally, in most countries, the president is the commander-in-chief. Now, the Syrian armed forces has always received support from the Russian Air Force. After 2015, Russian troops gave support for ground operations. And then there is IRGC, which is a wing of the Iranian armed forces. And then, as you know, IRGC always has support and backing from Shia political as well as militant group Hezbollah. Then there is Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK. Even they supported Bashar al-Assad's regime. The Turkish government has always tried to suppress the Kurdish national movement because Turkey views Kurdish nationalism as a threat to its territorial integrity. There is a big history behind it. All you have to understand is that after the establishment of modern Turkey in 1923, the government pursued policies of creating one national identity. While doing that, they had to suppress Kurdish cultural and political expression. As a result, some faction of that community formed this group called PKK and supported Bashar as a symbol towards carrying out animosity towards the Turkish government. So these are the main groups and organizations that have supported the Bashar al-Assad regime since the beginning of the Syrian civil war. Now on the other side, there is Turkey and United States. They support this group called YPG, that is People's Defense Unit. They have members of Kurdish ethnic, just like this group called PKK. Since both the group have Kurdish ethnic people, that means both groups almost follow the same ideology. In fact, the YPG group was inspired and shaped by the PKK's philosophy. But the only difference is that PKK wants political rights and autonomy for Kurdish people within Turkey, with broader regional influence. That's what makes them an enemy of the Turkish government. But then that doesn't mean that the Turkish government fully believes in YPG. The Turkish government have this skepticism towards YPG because they view YPG as an extension of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK. If you look at YPG, they want autonomy in northern Syria, that is Rojava. And that's what makes them an enemy of the Syrian government. And that is the reason they have the support of United States, but not much of Turkey. In fact, Turkey strongly opposes US support for the YPG because they see them as a direct link to the PKK. Then there is this another group called Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF. Always remember this, if there is a word called democracy included in the name of a group or an organization, then automatically come to this conclusion that America will support them. In fact, YPG is a significant component of the SDF. SDF is the umbrella group consisting of multi-ethnic coalition of fighters including Kurdish, Arab, Assyrian, Turkmen and other groups. There is this another group called Free Syrian Army, FSA. It was formed in July 2011, a few months after the start of the Syrian civil war. This group emerged within the Syrian armed forces, whose goal was to bring down the Bashar al-Assad regime. So naturally, Turkey and United States supported them. Keep a visual memory of this group. I will come back to it later. Now, apart from Turkey and United States, even the Gulf Cooperation Council, GCC, which includes Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, Kuwait, Bahrain and Oman are also involved in the Syrian civil war. United States and the Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF, maintain a close and strategic partnership. SDF is the primary partner of United States in Syria. On the other hand, Turkey does not have close relationship with SDF because of YPG being its backbone. Turkey only tolerates the YPG and SDF to some extent because of US involvement. Now that the main stakeholders have been mentioned, now I will begin explaining the connections. So Turkey, United States and the Gulf Cooperation Council have always supported the Free Syrian Army, FSA. And that is obvious because FSA was composed largely of defectors from the Syrian army, which meant that many of its members had valuable insider knowledge about the Syrian government's military strategies, operations and weaknesses. So FSA became the most favored group of United States, Turkey and GCC. By the way, the Free Syrian Army is now known as the Syrian National Army, which is a coalition of opposition groups in Syria. Now, in the middle, there was ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. ISIS emerged around 2013. Before that, they operated as Al-Qaeda in Iraq, AQI. When the Syrian civil war erupted in 2011, ISIS saw an opportunity by exploiting the chaos and power vacuum created by the conflict, and that's how they gained a foothold in Syria. As I said, ISIS operated as Al-Qaeda in Iraq during US occupation of Iraq in 2000. That means ISIS was created by former members of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. You can think of it as an evolution or rebranding. Now think about it. If ISIS was created by former members of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, who were badly weakened by the US forces in Iraq, when they arrived in Syria under a different name in 2013, who were they fighting against? Ideally, you would like to believe that they would be fighting against their old enemy, that is the United States, right? Instead, they were fighting against the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad. Now, some might say that United States forces got officially involved in Syrian civil war in 2014. That's correct. But then during the early years of the civil war, the US supported opposition groups in Syria like YPG, SDF and FSA. Even then, ISIS never targeted US proxies. They did minor attack here and there, but primarily ISIS targeted Assad's government and their support forces. Do you know why? Trump has this answer. Just listen to this clip.
They've created ISIS. Hillary Clinton created ISIS with Obama. Created with Obama.
Now that you have heard Donald Trump, but let me rephrase the statement properly. Now when you hear the statement, US created ISIS, I want you to understand the depth of this statement. It is not United States who created ISIS. It is United States government's actions that created ISIS. How do you think ISIS got these weapons, drones, rockets, missiles and pickup trucks like Toyota Hilux or Land Cruiser? When United States invaded Iraq, what was the goal of the invasion? Of course, it was to remove Saddam Hussein from power and put an end to his activities. But the ultimate goal was to somehow switch power from the hands of Sunni minorities into the hands of Shia majority. That too peacefully. But if you look at the American actions and policies in Iraq, right from the beginning of the Iraqi war in 2003, and also at the aftermath feeling of 9/11, they did everything to enrage the Sunni Muslims. Al-Qaeda and their affiliates are all Sunni Muslims. Part of the American policy also included dissolving the Iraqi army. Just imagine, hundreds and thousands of Iraqi soldiers had no other option but to join these radical groups to earn quick money. They became primary targets of jihadi recruiters. If you pay attention, ISIS exists in two places. One where America is withdrawing their troops, so ISIS can fill the power vacuum and get foothold. Example, Iraq and Libya. And the second place is where America is trying to overthrow a government which they can't control, that is Syria. Watch couple of ISIS captured videos, you will realize wherever they capture an ISIS suspect, they always find a lot of US money in their wallet. So this is where you need to understand that the US government's actions and policies is prime reason behind the creation of ISIS and their affiliates. So anyhow, coming back to the diagram, in the middle of the Syrian civil war, you have ISIS. ISIS used to attack Bashar's armed forces and their support groups, that is Russia, Iran, etc. Just like ISIS, there was another affiliate group of Al-Qaeda called Al-Nusra Front. Now I believe Al-Nusra Front is no longer active, but they emerged in 2012, and by 2017 they got merged with other rebel groups in Syria. They keep shuffling around under a new brand name. Anyhow, so ISIS entered the Syrian civil war in 2013. Iran always supported Bashar's government since 2011. Russia officially entered in 2015. That means it can be said that, since 2015, ISIS has actively fought against these three forces due to their opposition to its ideology and territorial ambitions. Now, ISIS began fighting with the US and the GCC forces in 2014. It clashed with Turkish forces in 2016. So it can be said that, by 2016, everyone started fighting with ISIS and ISIS also attacked everyone. Now, here's the weird part. Even the Al-Nusra Front should have faced backlash along with ISIS, right? But guess what? Only Bashar's armed forces and his supporters were fighting ISIS as well as Al-Nusra Front. US, Turkey and GCC did not engage with Al-Nusra Front because they did not see Al-Nusra Front as a direct threat, unlike ISIS. Instead, what United States, Turkey and GCC did, they gave direct support to Al-Nusra through the FSA group. Some of FSA's factions worked alongside Al-Nusra Front. It is like my enemy's enemy is my friend. Even Al-Nusra Front provided support to the Free Syrian Army in the early years of the Syrian civil war. I know it's getting complicated and difficult as to who is supporting who, but this is how it was happening. But then all you need to know is that broadly Turkey, United States, GCC, Russia and Iran are involved in the Syrian civil war through their proxies. One more thing that I want to tell you is that Russia and Turkey has a little bit of understanding among themselves. As I said, Turkey supports the Free Syrian Army and FSA used to frequently engage with Russian troops and warplanes, especially in the northern parts of Syria. There were incidents where Turkey's military and Russian forces came into close proximity. So somewhere Russia and Turkey have managed to avoid direct, large-scale conflict between their forces through a combination of strategic calculations and diplomatic agreements. Now, ISIS officially lost its territorial control in Syria in March 2019. That marked the end of the Caliphate dream. And it was the Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF, backed by the United States, who was primarily responsible for defeating the ISIS. Although it was a multinational conflict, many groups fought against ISIS, but SDF had a major role. Who was the US president from 2016 to 2020? Donald Trump. So his administration played a significant role in the defeat of ISIS in Syria. In 2018 and 2019, Trump made a controversial decision to pull United States troops out of Syria. He couldn't do that because he faced both domestic and international pressure for giving support to the SDF forces and counterterrorism operations in Syria. Although he did succeed in bringing back a large chunk of United States forces, but then he still had to maintain a small US military presence in eastern Syria to counter any ISIS leftover and prevent their re-establishment. Now, I want you to pay attention. When I said that Trump had both domestic and international pressure for giving support to the SDF forces, you need to understand what kind of pressure are we talking about. This pressure came from United States military leaders and commanders, including those in the Pentagon and CENTCOM. Then members of the Congress, both from the Republican and Democratic parties, expressed strong opposition to Trump's decision. Then military-industrial complex, consisting of major defense contractors, arms manufacturers, and private military companies, who would lose out financially. Then US allies in the region, including European countries, and other members of the anti-ISIS coalition, all showed concerns. Even Israel and Gulf countries wanted United States to continue its presence in Syria so that their interests are secured, that is countering the Iranian influence. Now just imagine, a lot of people in these large groups made tons of money and some might probably had genuine concerns and then there were personal interests of some partners as well. So naturally if the US president makes a controversial decision to completely withdraw US troops from Syria back in 2019, that is something which is going to upset a lot of people. So this is what the domestic and international pressure means. And this is also where you have to understand that the US president is not the one who calls all the shots. Now again, coming back to the diagram, you may have a question. After 2019, ISIS was defeated. Then what happened? Who replaced ISIS? So this is where you have to understand that after the defeat of ISIS in Syria in 2019, no single group fully replaced ISIS. But several militant organizations started gaining influence and wanted to desperately fill the vacuum created by ISIS. This include groups like Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS. They were previously known as Al-Nusra Front. Then FSA got more power. Although ISIS lost in 2019, but some of their factions started new small groups. Then SDF became prominent in the northeastern Syria. Now if you look at this group, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, this is the name that you've been hearing a lot in the news. The leader of HTS, Abu Muhammad al-Julani, his face you've been seeing a lot in the news lately. He led the insurgency that brought down Bashar al-Assad's regime and forced him to flee Syria and seek asylum in Moscow. As I said, HTS came out of al-Nusra Front. And I've also explained that US, Turkey and GCC gave indirect support to al-Nusra through the FSA group. That means some of FSA's factions worked alongside al-Nusra Front. So the point that I'm trying to make is that all these militant groups operating in Syria and in other parts of the world often rebrand themselves or change their names to distance themselves from their previous affiliations or to alter their image for strategic reasons. This is a tactic frequently used by groups within the broader Islamic extremist movement, especially when they want to gain support or legitimacy. Groups like Al-Nusra Front, which were originally aligned with Al-Qaeda, changed their names to Jabhat Fateh al-Sham and later to Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. It is an attempt to distance themselves from the Al-Qaeda label. And you think United States intelligence doesn't know that? They know everything. And yet, they provide indirect support to these newly formed groups. And I will also give you another reason why they often rebrand themselves. After rebranding, these groups often present new ideological objectives or goals that are more aligned with the local interests. This is a tactic which allows them to recruit more people from a wider pool of fighters who might have originally been hesitant about joining groups with a more global jihadist agenda. The problem with Al-Qaeda was that they wanted to become a global group with global jihadist agenda. But United States sorted them out in Afghanistan and Iraq. Then what happened? The members of Al-Qaeda started forming small groups with different names and objectives. Don't you think United States intelligence have all the intel on all these members of Al-Qaeda? Where they are going, what are they doing, what groups are they forming, etc., etc. They know everything. Similarly, this person, Abu Muhammad Al-Julani, do you think United States have no clue about this guy and his group HTS? They know it, and they have even supported him directly as well as indirectly. That is why I'm saying many of these so-called rebel groups are just different iterations of the same broader ideological umbrella. They may change names and objectives, but at their core, they are pursuing similar goals, that is the establishment of an Islamic state. And all these militant groups are designated terrorist organizations by the United States and the United Nations. But then still, United States indirectly supports them through their own network of proxies. So now that the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has left Syria, that means Russia and Iran has no objective to defend the Syrian Shia government. The Sunnis have taken over. And you will notice that ISIS or Al-Nusra Front or HTS, they have never attacked Israel, which is less than 100 miles away from Damascus. If you see, anti-Israel rhetoric is a common element in the ideology of many Islamic extremist groups, whether it is Shia or Sunni. In fact, at one point, ISIS also promoted anti-Israel rhetoric. However, despite being in Syria and so close to Israel, they never attacked Israel. This leads to a clear analysis that suggests that they do have US support. And even if someone says that the goal of rebel forces is to overthrow Assad regime, capture territories in Syria and establish their own Islamic state, then you have to also question yourself, who is allowing these Sunni rebel groups to fill the power vacuum in Syria? It is United States and Israel. In a way, there will be a re-emergence of Islamic Caliphate in Syria. For Iran, its alliance with Assad was crucial for supplying arms shipment to Hezbollah in Lebanon. Now it will be more difficult for Hezbollah to rearm. Israel has already severely weakened the military power of Hezbollah and Hamas. So, in a way, Assad's regime fall has benefited Israel. And in Syria, now we have to see what is going to happen between HTS and Syrian National Army. Because these two groups have both moderate and jihadi elements who have their own idea of Syria's future. And they will fight for supremacy because each one of them want to be in charge. I end my video here. I hope you found this video informative. I will see you in the next one.